Good afternoon, everybody. How you doing out there, huh? Neither am I. We're both tired of this unrelenting weather, aren't we? I think it's warmer in Santa's workshop at the North Pole, Kyle, than it is right here, huh?
Kind of seems like it.
You haven't been around as long as I've been around, but boy, this has got to be really, really getting tiresome for you too, huh?
Oh, yeah. This is the coldest it's been in, since I can remember.
Yeah, well, I can remember farther back than you can, and this is a whopper, I'll tell you. Boy, oh boy. Well, anyway, we're going to try and generate some heat this afternoon. We've got a great guest here, and very happy you're with us. We're going to be doing this right until 1 o'clock today, and you know, it's been a spell since we've had Joe Kimball on the program. Joe is a seasoned news reporter around these parts. For many years, he reported and wrote for the Morning Minneapolis Tribune, which merged with the Afternoon Minneapolis Star to form, ta-da, the Star Tribune. In recent years, Joe has been digging up stories and reporting them on the fine online news source MinPost. Among other things, Joe is a book author, most notably Secrets of the Congdon Mansion. That's the go-to book on the double murder in a Duluth Lakeside mansion back in the 1970s. And who knows, we might touch a little bit on that in the course of this hour. Joe, welcome back.
Thanks, Dan. I'm layered up.
How many layers on the toes today? About three or four?
A couple on the feet and Let's see, you got the fleece on and,
yeah.
And
polar fleece, the whole deal.
Yeah.
We are. We're intrepid souls, aren't we? Or crazy, or both. I don't know. Well, our teeth are, you know, Joe and I are by trade, by craft, by profession news reporters. I think we've sharpened our teeth and are ready to chew on some news this noon hour. So what about the cold? What's that? What's behind the cold snap? Is this some sort of communist plot, Joe? What's going on, Joe?
I think the communist plot's happening in Sochi. Didn't they say on the news, Norway's leading the medal count in Russia, so there's something going on
something,
there.
Something bad,
They're good at those winter games.
Vladimir Putin, huh?
Yes, yeah.
Look out for Mr. Putin, former KGB guy, wasn't he, huh?
Yeah.
Well, Joe, we have lots we can chew on here. What caught my attention, and probably yours too, picking up both the morning papers here in St. Paul and Minneapolis, let me start. Well, it's headlined, Best Seats in Viking's New House, $9,500. This is in the Pioneer Press. Yeah, I get that attention, huh, Kyle? This is a story by Doug Belden of the Pioneer Press. Here's how it goes. You want a season ticket on the 50-yard line right behind the Minnesota Vikings bench when the new stadium opens in 2016? You'll have to plunk down $9,500 for a, quote, personal seat license first. Then $400 per game for 8 home and 2 preseason games. Belden goes on, the team unveiled pricing details Friday that were largely in line with the parameters they announced in October. Parameters. The stadium will have 65,400 seats, including 3,400 separately handled seats and suites. Now, of the 62,000 remaining seats, about 50,000 require the one-time purchase of a seat license, which the team refers to as Stadium Builder's License, or SBL for short, in order to buy a season ticket for that seat. Now, fans have objected to paying a fee on top of paying for seats, particularly when about half the stadium cost is being paid with public money. And the Star Tribune this morning notes in its story that revenue from the seat fee will count as part of owner Ziggy Wilf's contribution to the construction. Joe Kimball, what do you make of this?
Huh? Well, I tell you, the Vikings owners are pretty savvy business people because they're getting not only the seat licenses, the naming rights is going to be another $100 million or so, mm-hmm. plus the NFL is kicking in $200 million. That's loan slash grant. We're not even sure how much they'll have to pay back. So that's basically almost their entire part of their contribution to the billion-dollar stadium.
So Ziggy's might have to pony up, what, $20-$30 when it's all over, huh? This is really wild.
And that would probably buy one beer when we get there.
Joe, before this thing was ever done, before the legislature and all the politicians on both sides of the aisle said okay, not all of them said okay, but enough did to get it through, wasn't there talk that there would be no public money in these sports stadiums? Weren't there pledges made by certain politicians?
Talked about trying to find ways to do it privately, and then, of course, there was the ill-fated gambling that was going to pay mm-hmm. for it. We're going to mm-hmm. use the money from the
ETABs.
That mm-hmm. didn't pan out. Nope. So it's really changed quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And it kind of all goes back to when they wanted a new stadium and there was this threat of going to Los Angeles. And at the time, it was pretty clear if you dug into it that it wasn't going to happen, but that became kind of the mm-hmm. mantra. That, mm-hmm. well, boy, if we don't give them a stadium, they'll be mm-hmm. gone. Mm-hmm. Well, they weren't going. No one's going to Los Angeles, and it was never going to happen.
But there's no team in Los Angeles as we speak, is there?
No.
There just isn't. So.
Right, and if someone does go there, and it seems like a good venue for the NFL, it wasn't going to be the Vikings.
Mm-hmm. The stadium is a moneymaker for the local economy. There's great controversy about that, isn't there, huh?
Well, yes, they talk about bringing in the money, and the recent thing is the going for the Super Bowl in about 2018, mm-hmm. I think it was. Mm-hmm. We were sent a team there to check it out when it was in New Jersey, mm-hmm. and at the time they said, well, boy, if we get a Super Bowl, we're going to get $500 million.
Where'd that number come from,
Joe? Well, the NFL came up with that. And other...
Sure it did.
The economists not affiliated with the NFL are talking about maybe $100 million or even less. It's a mystery.
A mystery.
Economics and statistics.
Yeah,
what we can do with that.
Yeah, yeah. Jay Weiner, who used to write for the Star Trek,
yeah,
didn't
good
he?
Friend
yeah.
Of, yeah,
yeah, good friend. Good friend. Yeah. He took some time off from the paper when he was there to write a book. He went around the country, wrote a book about the economics of sports stadiums. And what did he find out, Joe?
Well, that it is largely a myth. That a lot of the money's just recycled. It's money that people would have spent anyway somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of the money then goes out of town with the NFL and all mm-hmm. the pro sports mm-hmm. leagues. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. But what it does is it really helps our psyche.
Is that our pride?
A world class.
I see.
City or state with all these pro teams, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. it makes us feel better about ourselves. And mm-hmm. and there certainly is mm-hmm. a fair amount of people who really do care, who really get into it.
Yeah, and nothing in this conversation means that we don't like a well-played game down there on the field. It's great entertainment when the teams are good and there's a spirited competition.
And any day now, yes. we're going to have a team that's good.
What day would that be?
I don't know. Okay. The links start up again pretty soon.
They do make us proud, don't they?
They're very
anyway,
good.
Anyway, we got to keep our eye on the economic ball here on this stadium stuff. We just do. It's got nothing to do with our love of sports. Most of us do like it. But, whose pocket is being picked or whatever. And what do you have here? We have some subscribers from New York.
I was a little surprised this week. A guy I know for Bloomberg News, Tim Jones, came to town and interviewed the governor.
From New York, did he?
I think he might be based in... he's one of their correspondents.
Okay.
And I was a little surprised to read the governor kind of was sticking up for the stadium
Governor Dayton.
Mm-hmm. And they had a sit down in his office, mm-hmm. and the governor admitted that the economics of professional sports are so skewed that it looks ridiculous to any normal person looking at it. But he said, in this case, he says, we're going to get enormous returns. And he says, we're not dummies, governor said. If they were negative investments or had a bad negative effect on cities, there wouldn't be this clamor for them. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the clamor for them is coming, a lot of it's from the lobbyists and the diehard fans. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people who just wonder at why we're spending it on this when there are so many other mm-hmm. priorities that could be fixed.
Yeah. Interesting to get that take from the interview by Bloomberg News. Joe, you wrote a couple days ago that the state has completed its $462 million bond sale for the new Viking Stadium. Mm-hmm. Is this the bond sale that was held up by that lawsuit?
Yeah, they had to wait a little while, but now they've done it, and they seemed relatively happy with how it went.
Well, okay, the bond sale. But the lawsuit, and it's interesting that the state Supreme Court declined to hear the suit, not on its merits. It didn't decide on the merits. It said it had no jurisdiction over a state and city law. Why doesn't the highest court in the state have jurisdiction over a a matter like that, Joe?
That's a very good question.
Thank you. And then I have another question.
let me enroll in the law school quick, and I'll get back to you in three years.
It does beg the question, though, doesn't it? If the state Supreme Court doesn't have jurisdiction, well, who the heck does?
I don't know. Sometimes they've, in other cases, they say, well, that's a legislative thing. It isn't a court thing. And, you know, the city council in Minneapolis was involved in this one. My guess is it's something like that. But on the other hand, you know, seems like they could weigh in on this.
I think so. Always the diplomat, Joe. Then there was another lawsuit that went before the state appeals court, the next notch down from the state Supreme Court. And they said, oh, this lawsuit, we can't rule on this because it was not filed in a timely fashion. Yeah. So we did not get a ruling on the merits of the lawsuit in either case, did we?
No.
So who knows? Yeah. I just put that out there because, you know, it's interesting, isn't it? Well, let's see. We talked about the governor, Dayton. He has a new running mate, doesn't he now? Lieutenant Governor.
Yes. Tina Smith is his chief of staff, and so he looked far and wide.
He did, right outside his office door.
It reminds me, a lot of times they have these national searches, you know.
Quote-unquote.
Right. It always ends up being the guy in the office next door. but by all accounts, I have to say, I've never met her, but it sounds like she's a very savvy, politically astute observer and advisor to the governor, has been a long-time advisor, worked with R.T. Ryback, my old buddy.
Ray Ryback from the Star Tribune.
Right, we sat next to each other at the paper back when he was one of us.
Mm-hmm. And he became
journalist.
One of them.
Well, he...
Mayor of Minneapolis for a long time.
Did a very nice job at that.
Mm-hmm. And so Tina Smith is now going to be Governor Dayton's running mate in the next election. And what about she's from Minneapolis. There had been some hollering and hooting about saying, hey, this is kind of the Minneapolis mafia here. Everybody's from Minneapolis. What about outstate Minnesota getting on the ticket?
Yeah, the general wisdom is that you try to fill the gap, you know, with lieutenant governor or vice president. Mm-hmm. You look for help in areas where you might be a little weaker. Uh-huh. The governor might have thought, as he did in his first term with Lieutenant Governor
Yvonne Prettner Solon. She's got five or six or seven names from Duluth.
And, you know, kind of filled that
out. She angrily said, I don't want this job anymore.
She felt that she wasn't, I think, being listened to. I think she thought that going into it that somehow she'd be co-governor or something.
Lieutenant governors never are listened to.
No, it doesn't happen that way.
It doesn't.
It seems that they should have communicated that
I think so.
Coming to a head like this.
Joe, precinct caucuses this past week, looking at the Republicans, we talked about Dayton and Tina Smith as the running top of the ticket there. You know, these are kind of straw polls, these precinct caucuses. Sometimes they have big attendance, sometimes they have four or five people. Mm-hmm. But on the Republican side here, let's see, it's Marty Seifert who kind of came out on top as far as the governor's race for Republicans, huh?
Yeah, in this early warning system thing, things can change. As we go through, it's a long time till November, although it's going to go fast, and we're going to be inundated soon because there are a good handful of candidates running for the Republican nomination, and even then, who knows if we'll end up with a primary instead of a...
It could be. The old endorsement system may be down the chute.
Well, it didn't work for the DFL 4 years ago Governor Dayton... didn't even get involved in
that's
the
true. He got thrown off the floor of the convention. That's Joe, right. You were there.
Yes, yeah.
Not being thrown out, but you were there.
Might have tried to throw me out too, but I did see him being refused entry and
really?
Wouldn't give him credentials and walked out. It was in Duluth there on the waterfront, and we had a little chat about that. And he, you know, he kind of made it clear that he had another route, and indeed he did. And he did win the primary.
You're throwing out one day, and you're governor the next. How about that? That's Minnesota politics. Anyway, Marty Seifert, a former, of course, Republican state representative in the House here, came out on top again. Who knows what's going to happen? But he kind of pushed aside, Dave Thompson, I think, who's politically a little to the right of Seifert, isn't he?
Yeah. So
maybe more of a Tea Party type, Thompson?
Right. So okay. Seifert's a little more to the middle.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then the Republicans chose, State Senator Julianne Ortman as their Senate choice. Again, this is all subject to...
To run against Al Franken.
Al Franken,
because, you know, the Republicans have these two opportunities here to break the DFL stronghold, which right now exists in the state. with both Senator Franken and Governor Dayton up, plus the state house.
Does, from what you hear, from what you see, does Senator Franken have any chinks in the armor? What do you think?
The biggest thing is the history of barely winning the recount 6 years ago against then Senator and previously Mayor Norm Coleman, who I covered for many years in St. Paul. Mm-hmm. And I think just the fact that that was so close and lasted so long with that recount that many people think that, well, you know, he must be vulnerable. Now, that being said, I don't know that he's angered too many people, and he's seems to have worked fairly competently in D.C. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure that that's certainly not a slam dunk for Republicans, but and I think definitely it's leaning blue.
I heard, interesting, I heard right after Franken was elected, after that recount, here, thin margin, that he asked a number of politically smart people around here what he should do when he went to the Senate. And to a man and woman, they told him, Al, shut up and listen. Yeah. Listen and learn. And I think he did that. I think he did. You were expecting a Saturday Night Live show from this guy who used to be a writer and performer on SNL. But he was relatively quiet. And
he's really toned down.
He isn't he?
Because, clearly he's a very bright, clever, witty fellow.
Yes.
But as you know, what's happened is that the funniest senator from Minnesota is not him.
Yes, that's right. That's
Amy
right.
Klobuchar has taken over that title.
She's doing the punchlines. Huh?
She is. And she is very funny if she does some of these, dinner, correspondence dinners and things. And then she's come to Min Roast, and they both have. And and she's good. She's very funny. And, he can be when he wants to be, but he really has turned it down.
Right. I hear you're pretty funny at the Min Roast, too, Joe. You're
funny looking.
No. Governor Dayton, what about his? Any vulnerability there?
Minshew is going to be a problem, because the buck stops with him.
Yep.
On that, they should have seen these problems way, way earlier. And I speak from experience because I actually did sign up for it over many months.
Ooh.
Believe me, just a terrible, painful process getting through it. And then eventually I did get through, but they forgot... They didn't transmit the information about our college-age son, and so I'm still working on it.
So that monkey might be on Mark Dayton's back. At least a lot of people blame
that,
him.
There'll be some stadium anger, too.
There will be some blowback on that, too. Joe Kimble, my guest. Joe, a great reporter here with Min Post. Before that, the Star Tribune, and we're having a good time here chewing on the news here and stuff that's in the, the headlines lately and even in the finer print, too, on the back pages. So stay with us. We'll be right back. At the Stan Turner Show, we love good stories, and there's no better place to find them than Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater. Valley Bookseller is an independent bookstore with knowledgeable and friendly staff who love books. Tell them what you like to read, and they'll make terrific recommendations just for you. Also, discover one of the finest children's collections in the entire Twin Cities. Valley Bookseller, great books, great people. 217 North Main in Stillwater. Online at valleybookseller.com.
At Jaime's Haberdashery, men never sacrifice fashion for weather. So no matter how cold it gets, you can still spot a Jaime's man by his impeccable taste and the confidence that only comes from a hot lather shave. Jaime's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Create a look that's uniquely yours with tailored suits, overcoats, hats, and accessories that make winter blush and at prices that won't melt your wallet. Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at Jaime's.com.
Come and join us for the daytime dinner theater experience at Ideal Hall. This month we are featuring the music of Steve Kovacs and Julie Easterly as they sing us down memory lane. We'll hear songs of Nat King Cole, Gershwin, Sinatra, Eva Cassidy, and Diana Krall. We'll also enjoy their delightful banter. The show will be performed on Tuesday, February 18th at Ideal Hall. Bring a friend, or just bring the entire neighborhood. Ideal Hall is located in St. Paul at 1494 Dale Street. Doors open at 11:30. Meal is at noon. Show starts at 1:15. Free parking, handicap accessible, delicious dinners by TST Creative Catering, all for the price of only $20. For more information and to make reservations, call Presence Promotions at 651-489-4000. 9617. Again, that's Steve Kovacs and Julie Esserly at Ideal Hall on Tuesday, February 18th. For more information, call Presence Promotions at 651-489-9617.
We are back. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. Stan Turner with you here. Always lovely to have your company. Where are we, Kyle? About 7 above zero, right in there, huh?
It says 9 here.
Does it say 9?
Oh, it's a heat wave.
Joe Kibble weighed in there. Joe is our guest here. Joe from MinPost, the fine online news service. We'll take every degree we can get, Joe. Thanks for coming back here, buddy. It's been a while. I'm going to the History Theater tonight to see a fine play based on back in 1960, I think it was a 10 or maybe a 12-year-old guy named Ronnie Rabinowitz who became a pen pal of Jackie Robinson, the great Dodgers slugger, and then became friends with JFK, who was running for president in the Wisconsin primary. This all happened in Sheboygan. The incredible season of Ronnie Rabinowitz tonight on stage at History Theater in St. Paul. We had them on the show last week.
Yes, I heard Ron talking about it, and the boy.
Yeah, the boy was here, too. Yes, Jack Alexander. What a great guy.
Right, yeah, what a bright...
He's a bright light, just like the real Ronnie.
Yeah.
The real Ronnie, who lives now in a Minneapolis suburb, took this young actor out to his house. He has a room, Ronnie does, now he's in his 60s, a room still dedicated to Jackie Robinson, all the memorabilia, and the JFK material, too. So
the
young boy was wowed, and they gave him really a good flavor for the person he portrays on stage. Speaking of History Theater, Joe, and stop punching the microphone, please. History Theater, they're always Ron Peluso, the artistic director. What a mind he has. He always has to, be working 2-3 seasons ahead. And he has been developing a possible, musical, I guess it would be on stage there, but something you know intimately, and that would be I mentioned it in the introduction, the Congdon murders back in '77.
Yes.
A musical about a double murder.
I got a couple, call a couple months ago that they were interested in doing a show about the Congdon murders.
Well, that stands to reason, but a musical.
Yes. Then they said it was a musical. They were working on some songs, and so Peg Meyer and I...
Oh, Peg.
Former reporter. Mm-hmm. At the Star Tribune. She's retired now. Mm-hmm. Also an author, Bring Warm Clothes, and many other interesting historical...
Too Hot, Went to the Lake, that sort of thing.
So Peggy and I had both worked on the case back when it happened.
Yep.
In fact, the very, very short story is that I was a rookie reporter, headed to Duluth, ended up there the day of the murders, and so they were stuck with me to cover it, but they had Peg backing me up in Minneapolis, working the phones and doing the rewrite.
We got the rookie Joe up north.
Yes, and then Peg ended up going to Denver to investigate the adopted daughter and her husband, who were suspects early on. So Peg is very well grounded in this case also. And so she and I went and met with some of the History Theater people and talked about kind of the background of it, who the characters were, why we care, how it's been going on and on for years. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so they began developing this, and I was out of town about 2 weeks ago, and they actually did kind of a run through with the songs, and Ron was telling me the other day that he likes where the songs are. Mm-hmm. But they still got some work to do on the story.
A song and dance about a double murder. How does that work, Joe?
Well, I had my doubts at first, but and of course I was gone and did not hear it. But Ron was saying that one of the songs is kind of a sad, slow ballad about Velma Pietola.
Oh, the poor night nurse who was
killed. The
night
nurse. Miss Congdon was 83 years old, living in Glensheen, the Congdon Mansion in Duluth, which is now a very well-attended tour spot. And Miss Congdon was partially paralyzed at age 83, and needed round-the-clock nursing. And one of her longtime nurses was named Velma Pietola, and she turned 65 in May of 1977 and retired. But then a month later, the nurse who had taken her shift wanted to go to a wedding for the weekend, and they needed someone to fill in the overnight shift. And Velma said, "Okay, well, I'll do it this once. I'm happy to come back and see my old friend Elizabeth Congdon." So Velma was on duty that night working the overnight shift when someone broke into the house, and came up the stairway, and Velma heard the rustling outside, came out with a flashlight into the dark, into the big, huge stairway leading up from the first to the second floor. And she fought with the attacker, the intruder, and was beaten to death on that stairway with a candlestick holder. She was 65 years old, filling in that night, and was killed trying to defend her friend, Elizabeth Congdon. The killer then, of course, after it killed Velma, went upstairs and smothered Miss Congdon in her bed, and she was unable to flee or fight back because she was paralyzed on one side. And so the double murder there. So that, as I understand it, is a very touching song in this show that is being developed. And Ron said that one of her relatives, it might have been a niece or something, actually had heard about the run-through and came down and listened and was very touched and enjoyed the part about Velma. It made her very very likable and very sad. Now, I don't think the same is the true the stories about Marjorie, who's the adopted daughter who was raised at Glensheen and was accused of planning the murder in order to speed up her inheritance. She was acquitted of the murders and found not guilty, but since then has been in prison a couple different times on arson charges. There have been a few other dead bodies in her wake. And it's interesting. She
husbands, I think.
Yeah, a couple of husbands. There are a few others that that have died too. So she's turning 83, which is the age her mother was when she died. So
Marjorie Caldwell turning 83.
Yeah. Marjorie Congdon Caldwell Hagen.
Wow. Her her former husband, one of them, Roger, was convicted of the crime.
Yes. He's the one who came actually into the mansion. They were living in Denver at the time, near Denver, Golden, Colorado. And Marjorie did not come here, but Roger did, and he later confessed as part of a plea bargain, which enabled him to actually be released from prison after just over 5 years in prison for confessing that he killed the two women. About 12 years later, he then killed himself in Latrobe, Pennsylvania. I believe that he was unable to live with what he'd done. Also, he had thought that by not implicating his former wife, Marjorie, that she might, quote, take care of him somehow, and she never did. In fact, she remarried someone without even divorcing Roger. So he was in dire straits. I went to visit him a couple different times in Pennsylvania to talk to him about, to try to get more background on the case. But he just never, he would never implicate her at all. He was very reluctant to even discuss the actual happenings of that day, because he was on record on his plea bargain with a very firm confession of what he did step by step by step. And he believed, and I think he's right, that if he deviated from that at all, even in telling me the story, that the prosecutors in Duluth would have gotten him for perjury.
Oh!
Because he had sworn statement, and if there was anything different, they would have loved to have him back in prison, because this was a real stain on their record to have let him go after 5 years. I mean, it's still a scandal in many people's minds.
Joe, just a footnote here. You know as much about this case as anybody does. Do you think Roger had an accomplice that night who got cold feet and ran?
I think it's very likely that he did. The premise that was presented to the two juries, Roger's trial where he was convicted and then Marjorie's trial where she was acquitted, was that that it was just him. They didn't raise the specter of a second person. But there's a lot of holes in the case that could be explained by speculating about a possible accomplice.
Well, maybe someday you'll have a chance to talk with Marjorie. I don't know. We'll just have to see what happens. I don't think she's really game to. She never has been.
No, she's game to talk about it. She hasn't been.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Joe Kimball from InPost with us here. Let's see. Oh, something on the light side, Joe. You did a story just this past week. I think it maybe even yesterday. It's posted. Minnesota Olympians applauded by Governor Dayton. So throwing some bouquets at our athletes there.
Well, yes.
He says he wished that was his aspiration, wasn't it?
My favorite part of this was that he says in this proclamation honoring the Minnesotans, and we have many of them in curling and hockey and skiing and all kinds of things. We're a winter sports hotbed.
That's kind of an oxymoron, isn't it? I like that, though. A winter sports, an Arctic hotbed.
Yeah, a polar vortex hotbed, something. But my favorite part of this in the proclamation was the governor saying that he was one of the many Minnesotans who grew up dreaming of making the U.S. Olympic team. Mm-hmm. And he actually was a hockey player.
Oh, that's right. He was.
I think fairly good at it. Maybe that explains the hip problems and stuff.
He's got hip problems, yes. In fact, he was supposed to have surgery this past week, but he opted out. He's postponed it. So, in fact, right now, just beginning in Minneapolis at Westminster Presbyterian Church, funeral services for Joan Mondale.
Yes, she died this past Monday, and they are having the memorial service today. Former President Jimmy Carter is here, and his wife Rosalind, and also Vice President Joe Biden and his wife Jill.
Right.
I remember that.
You pulled that one right out of the Arc de Guerre, Joe. Very good.
And of course, Eleanor, Joan Mondale, mother of Eleanor, who was a former media person who also has died. Mm-hmm. But Joan is married to Walter Fritz Mondale, who was vice president under Jimmy Carter.
Right.
Sort of a mild personal aside on that is Walter Mondale and Joan were in Japan for several years. He was ambassador, U.S. ambassador to Japan. And my cousin, Mark Fitzpatrick, was one of his aides over there.
Really?
Yeah, he was in the Foreign Service then, and was a top aide in Tokyo to Fritz.
Interesting.
Yeah. So
a brush with greatness, Joe.
Well, right. It's just not me, but my cousin.
No, I know your cousin.
And
that's
he's from White Bear Lake. Where,
just once removed, though. That all figures.
A year ahead of me in school.
We should say that the late Joan Mondale managed to step out of the shadow of her husband. Not that he put her in a shadow, but you know, wives usually get kind of stuck in the rear ranks there, and their husbands are always up front, center in the spotlight. But she staked out some important ground promoting the arts. She became known as Joan of Arts.
Yes, very. Whoever coined that did a good job long ago.
Not,
it's since been a little overused, but yes, she made her own way on that and was well remembered for that.
One little really footnote on Walter Mondale was, you said he was ambassador, U.S. ambassador to Japan, and the New York Times Sunday Magazine did a feature on him while he was just after he left Japan after his service in the diplomatic corps, and when you're in Japan, you do as the natives do, and you'd put on a kimono at some formal social gatherings, and he did that, and the Japanese were trying to stifle snickers and laughs because he had crossed the wrong side of the kimono over, which denotes mourning or death.
Oh, my.
And the Japanese thought that was pretty funny, but poor Walter didn't know that he had created quite a social faux pas, so the things that we do that we don't realize we're doing.
How would we even
how
know?
How would you know? Yeah. When's the last time, Kyle, you had your kimono on, huh? It's been a while.
Oh, yeah. It's probably been a few years.
Thank you.
I bet you got the sash right, though.
Yeah.
I bet you anything.
We're with Joe Kimball here of MinPost. Yes, the online Twin Cities-based news source. Joe, for many years, as you well know, a reporter for the Minneapolis Tribune and the Star Tribune, and a great friend of ours. And, Joe, let's take a breather here for a second. We'll come back. We've got lots more to talk about here. Things that have been in the news that relates to all of us. What's this about literacy rating? Minneapolis topping St. Paul. I know some literate people in St. Paul, Joe.
They're both here.
Right. We'll be right back. To really experience a book, meet the author. I'm Stan Turner for Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater. Every month, Valley Bookseller's calendar is loaded with events featuring both local and national authors. Visit valleybookseller.com and click the events calendar for a complete list. Choose from monthly events like the Totally Criminal Cocktail Hour or special presentations with authors on tour. Meet your favorite author at Valley Bookseller. Great books, great people. 217 North Main in Stillwater.
At Jaime's Haberdashery, men never sacrifice fashion for weather. So no matter how cold it gets, you can still spot a Jaime's man by his impeccable taste and the confidence that only comes from a hot lather shave. Jaime's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Create a look that's uniquely yours with tailored suits, overcoats, hats, and accessories that make winter blush and at prices that won't melt your wallet. Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul, online at Jaime's.com.
Did you know we're America's greatest natural resource?
What's a resource?
It means we're important to the future of our country.
Am I important too?
You are all important. America needs you and the talent you will bring to our country. Hello, my name is Marianne Koharski, and I'm the director of Pro-Life Across America, the Billboard People. Our life-saving messages appear on thousands of billboards offering information and alternatives to abortion. Our ads are a reminder that every baby is precious and unique, truly our greatest natural resource. If you know someone who is pregnant or in need of information or alternatives, or would like to support the work of Pro-Life Across America, call 1-800-366-7773 or visit our website at prolifeacrossamerica.org. Pro-Life Across America, educational and non-political.
A baby is a baby is a baby.
Thank you very much for being along with us this afternoon. Stan Turner here, and we are enjoying our visit, as we always do, with Joe Kimball, a noted journalist here in these parts, the Minneapolis-St. Paul and beyond. Joe Kimball for years with the Star Tribune in Minneapolis, and now with MinPost, the online news service based in Minneapolis. Joe's all over the place. Joe, some of your recent stories here, we mentioned this before the break. Where do these surveys come from? This one's headlined, Minneapolis stays third in literacy rating. St. Paul falls to seventh. This is a nationwide rating, is it? An annual literacy study of the nation's largest cities has, again, Washington, D.C. and Seattle.
Seattle, I can buy.
Yeah.
Washington, D.C., I'm troubled by that because...
a lot of people are troubled by Washington, D.C.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm not sure how well those congressmen actually can read out there. This guy from Connecticut does this study.
Yeah.
And maybe he relies on grants from Congress and he wants to make them look good. I don't know. Or are they counting all the books in the Library of Congress? Is that what makes them more literate?
Very dubious about these surveys. This is a USA Today Chronicle, though they had a story on the results
here.
Yeah,
they had a story about it. Now, and the other thing is, if they put us together, St. Paul, Minneapolis, I mean, you know, a lot of times we're considered the Twin Cities, and we'd be number one for sure.
Sure, you know? Sure, sure. Well, as we said, you know, St. Paul has slipped to seventh place, and you and I know literate people in this capital city of Minnesota,
right.
Don't we?
Yes.
I'm trying to come up with some names.
But
they're there, and you mentioned us. Sometimes
we're East Metro-centric.
We are. But look at this. From this, the so-called takeaway from this survey, parts of the Rust Belt are not so rusty when it comes to public libraries. Cleveland is number one.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh, number two in libraries, based on branches, volume, circulation, staff. How about readers? That's what I wonder about.
Right.
How about, this one really blows me away. Boston, number 27 in education levels, despite being home to scores of colleges, because, quote, of its abysmal high school dropout rate.
I didn't know that either.
Just doesn't ring true, but apparently it is.
Maybe they play hooky and go to watch the Red Sox every day.
Maybe that's
I
it. Joe, these surveys, we have to be careful, don't we, these things? I'm not sure about the veracity. Can I use that word on
the
radio?
That's a good word.
Veracity. We're not sure about that. Let's get back to the more serious stuff. Joe, you wrote the other day, this past week, about Twin Cities mayors getting behind the Raise the Minimum Wage effort here in Minnesota. We have a legislative session coming up. They will convene later this month. What's the old sign we used to see in the press room at the Capitol? No person's life, liberty, or property is safe when the legislature is in session.
It might be a Mark Twain thing.
It is. It goes way back to the 18th
century. So it
isn't
just us.
No, it's not just us. Anyway, we have a session coming up, and this is going to be one of the front burner issues, boosting the minimum wage. And what do we hear about this?
Well, it's a real hot DFL topic, and they're really pushing hard for it. The business groups and a lot of Republicans think that it would harm commerce and slow things down, slow the recovery down a little bit. But they've shown some of these examples of no one can live on $7 an hour.
What is the current minimum right now?
In the state it's $6.15, but there's a federal $7.25 that covers most things. I think there's a few places that have to do it.
So it's seven and a quarter an hour.
Yeah, and so they're talking about $9.50. You know, as a possible, some of the more liberal DFLers would like it higher in the $10 range, but $9.50 seems to be where they're coming together on that. And we're seeing the mayors, Chris Coleman in St. Paul, and the new Minneapolis mayor Betsy Hodges had an event just the other day saying they're on board. They're going to get their city councils to pass resolutions supporting the increase. Of course, both St. Paul, Minneapolis are bastions of DFLism, so they're not going out on a limb or anything. It's you know, they're just catering to their base, but want to lend as much support as they can.
Who object to raising it, you mentioned some Republicans, certainly business interests. What's their fear with a higher minimum wage? That they'll have to lay off people because they simply, especially small business, can't afford it.
Small business couldn't afford it.
Right.
That's what they think.
Okay.
But I think the counter argument is that if we do pay people a living wage, they'll spend more. Business will get better for everyone. The higher tide kind of thing. If we can do that.
Last legislative session, the one that adjourned before the new year, that was controlled by Democrats, both House and Senate, as well as the governor's office. Was there a push? Do you recall? Was there a push to raise the minimum wage?
Not a hard push.
Okay.
There were a lot of other distractions that
session.
Social issues and tax things and such. This one was sort of on back burner. Now they see the time. They think maybe the time is right now.
Okay. Well, we'll see. We'll be watching it. We'll be watching it. Let's see. Other things. Governor Dayton, other Midwestern governors, you wrote, are asking the president for some help with propane. We have propane problems here, huh?
The price has just skyrocketed, and there are people who rely on that for heat. Here in the Twin Cities, we typically use natural gas, most people, and that I think is a little bit higher. And especially, it's costing more because it's been such a cold winter that we're using more. But in many rural areas, they rely on that to heat their homes, and there has been a shortage and causing the price to skyrocket. Now, both the federal and state governments have eased some restrictions on drivers of the big trucks that carry it, letting them work more hours so that we can, in theory, get more of it here from other areas of the country that aren't struck with a shortage at this time. And there was a pipeline problem up in Canada. And then also the farmers in the state used more this year because of the wet fall to dry their crops, and a lot of that was used. Mm-hmm. So there were several factors involved in this, but I've heard from people who say that they're holding off filling their tank because of the huge cost and keeping the temperature at a bare minimum.
What can the White House do?
I think they would ease some of these restrictions on interstate travel with shipping it in and.
Okay.
That's, they're hoping they can do some of that.
It is. Propane shortage in some cases. It's going kind of up in flames, isn't it?
Well, yeah, they're going to have
an interesting observation
the
coming
out. A Hudson hot air balloon fest. A little controversy. Somebody said, well, maybe we shouldn't use the
that's propane isn't it?
Yeah.
Put the balloons up there.
But but they've had this scheduled for a long time.
Okay, we'll let them go ahead.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, let's see. What else do we have here? You wrote, Joe. Well, let's see. A couple weeks ago, a Hastings car dealer has filed a lawsuit to fight the ACA. That would be the what? The ACA.
That would be the Obamacare
Affordable
Care Act.
Yes. To fight its contraception mandate. This is an issue that's nationwide from state to state, isn't it?
Yes, and this is, I think, the first formal action here that we've seen, as if Affordable Care Act doesn't have enough problems with the exchanges and the computer problems and all those things. Many people around the country, particularly very religious people, who are opposed to contraception and don't like the mandate that this has to be covered under the new policies.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel that that's impinging on their freedom of religion.
Mm-hmm.
And so this man in Hastings who has two car dealerships actually went so far as to go to court to challenge it, saying that it's you know, it's harming him and his employees, and he doesn't want to have to pay to have something that he doesn't believe in.
Okay, and he's taken this to federal court.
Yes. Hmm?
So that'll be pending. We don't know when that's going to come to...
Sometimes they take forever, sometimes they act right away.
They can.
He wanted to stay so that they wouldn't have to pay it now and then until it gets sorted out.
Well, Joe Kimble, how's your post-recession recovery coming? People are saying, well, not all that good. We don't know. It varies from person to person, family to family, state to state. Minneapolis is leading, apparently, in Minnesota cities in the post-recession job recovery, anyway.
I think we're finding that around the country, that the overall statistics seem to indicate that a lot of jobs have come back, a lot of people are doing better, but it really varies place by place. And even in Minnesota, the statistics here show that Minneapolis has recovered all the jobs that were lost and gained some since then. And that's not true everywhere else. In fact, St. Paul is still down.
Right.
This particular study was the private sector. It didn't include government, which St. Paul...
Lots of government jobs
in St. Paul. So that probably skews that a little bit.
All right. Well, anyway, Minneapolis leading the pack among Minnesota cities in post-recession job recovery. Our jobless rate is fairly low here.
Compared
right
to
now.
The national. We're down in the fours, and national, I think, just fell to maybe 6.6 the other day.
It dropped a little bit.
Yep. Interesting thing on that study was that Golden Valley somehow didn't suffer any private job losses in between 2007 and 2009.
What does Golden Valley know we don't?
I don't know how
they do that.
Now, since then, they've had a slight decline during the recovery. So it really does show that this is very particular, focused on some industries are doing just fine, but many still struggling.
Yeah, that's I guess the bottom line, or the takeaway, as we say these days. Hennepin County has hired Joe a bicycle pedestrian coordinator. Is this person going on the payroll?
They did have.
Do you
one
want that job? Or
I wouldn't know what to do.
What is?
I can walk around and.
Can you coordinate pedestrians, Joe?
As often, it's a little more complicated. They work as a liaison with the Public Works Department on making sure that the pathways are planned in advance when they're talking about new roads and new construction. Also, to make sure that once they plan them, they've got to execute them and make sure that they're clear. Consult with the county board. That's always a good job.
Consult with the county board.
How would you like to do that all day?
You know, bicycles, even in this horrible cold, there are a lot of people two-wheeling out there.
Big, fat tire bikes?
Star Trip had a picture yesterday. Yes, they're 4 inches wide.
Yes.
They're called fat bikes, aren't they?
We had seen
Kyle,
one.
Do you have a fat bike?
I don't, but I have seen, though. Yeah, they're like the super thick ones made for snow and ice. And
they
that.
Don't go through snow very well, by the way.
Well,
that's what they say. But then what do I know?
I'm going to coordinate you.
Are you going to thanks, Joe.
So
we're going to put you on the payroll. We're going to put you in Hennepin County and coordinate you, and we'll be a bicycle pedestrian. But there are a lot of bicycles out there, and that does raise a very serious matter. There have been a lot of accidents, especially in Minneapolis. Yeah. A couple of fatal ones recently.
And
some of it involves apparently alcohol. But still, they're hard to see at night. Some do have flashing lights on their helmets, but still, my goodness, some of the bike routes in downtown Minneapolis are horrendous because you're right cheek by jowl as you're going by in your car. So, danger. R.T. Ryback, that was his idea to put that bike lane. I'm not so
like
sure
that.
About that, R.T.
It's confusing for parkers, for bikers.
It is.
I mean, even pedestrians walking through there, you crash into them.
Yep, that's right.
There's got to be a better way, and I am very hopeful that Kelly Yemen, the new bicycle pedestrian coordinator, will help solve this problem.
Let's keep an eye on her, Joe.
All right.
Every day when you go into work at MinnPost, check that out.
All right.
Promise?
How are we doing on that planning?
All right. How's the new Minneapolis mayor doing? Betsy Hodges has now taken over from R.T. Ray Ryback.
Yep.
And she knows the turf over there pretty well. She was on the
city
council.
for a long time. Yep. So she's...
Is anybody getting her head? You know, they always do.
Yeah. You always have to have your own stamp on things.
Yeah,
new mayor Hodges is not keeping city coordinator Paul Assen and community planning and economic developer Jeremy Hansen Willis. They're out, But she is keeping six of the other department heads. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be a lot of continuity. And she knows these people. She's worked with them for years.
Mm-hmm. What about her? What do you know about Hodges? Well, she wasn't the biggest stadium booster in the world, was
no,
she?
No, she wasn't. She beat Mark Andrew, who I knew better. I knew Mark pretty well. He was a county commissioner back when I covered Hennepin County back in the early 80s.
Right.
But she really worked hard. And, of course, the 35-candidate thing.
Wow. It took 2 months to vote when you went in the booth.
A lot of names to go through.
A lot of names up there, Kyle. People were just glassing over there. Yeah. But Betsy came out on top of that
one. Yes. And, people have talked to feel like, she's done a good job in the city council. Yeah. And they're anxious to see how she does in leading now as opposed to legislating.
Okay, all right. Now she's an administrator.
Right. It's a whole different deal.
It is.
And, you wonder how people can make that adjustment. She's confident she can do that. She's told people, this is where I'm headed. Some thought that maybe she's the kind of person who might have been a good, county board if she was moving from city council.
She could coordinate bicycles since she were the county board.
Unless you or I get that job.
Say the Green Line is coming to St. Paul, Joe. Yeah. What do you think of that? June 14th, I think the light rail will come railing through St. Paul.
I'm still not used to Green Line. Central Corridor is what we've been calling it for the last, 20 years of planning. Yeah. I think they had a Green Line coordinator job, too.
Yeah.
No, it's going to open. It's finished for the most part. I mean, and they're doing test trains. Mm-hmm. You got to watch out along University Avenue there. Mm-hmm. They wanted a really big goal was to get it ready for the All-Star Game in July.
The
Major League Baseball, mm-hmm. the Target Center, Target Field.
Right.
Well, they're all targets. Target Field has the All-Star Game in mid-July. And so the goal, they say the trains are going to be running between downtown St. Paul and downtown Minneapolis in June. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a long, long journey. Takes a long time, I think more than a half hour, 30, 40 minutes to get between the two downtowns. Whereas if there's no traffic and you're driving, it's like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But then you do have to park. You have to go get, so they're mitigating factors.
But the light rail will take you right to the door of Macy's in downtown St. Paul where nothing exists. There is no Macy's. Yeah. And does the light rail, does it go by the XL
it
Energy
does not.
Center? Did you say it does not go by the XL Center where big events happen in St. Paul?
Nor the new under construction St. Paul Saints Stadium on the other end of downtown.
Doesn't go there either.
It goes right in the middle.
My goodness.
Yeah. I think we needed some kind of a circulator or something to take people to where they wanted to go. In Minneapolis, it comes right to the baseball field.
It does.
To Target Field.
It
drops you off there.
Yeah.
It also goes right by where the new Viking Stadium is going to be.
Right.
There's a stop there.
There's a new stadium. That's right. I forgot the one that Ziggy Wilf is going to pay for a couple bucks.
But there's a stop right at the old dome, which is where the...
Right.
Where the new Viking Stadium is going to be.
Well, in St. Paul, with these dead zones, we could put streetcars in to tie it all together.
I think
Joe.
We'd like to do that.
Didn't we have streetcars in St. Paul?
That's before my time. But my parents remember them well.
So do mine.
They talked about coming to the Lowry Medical Center for every appointment you ever had. You take the streetcar.
Take Joe down for his dental appointment, you could go on the streetcar.
Yeah, the streetcars.
Oh, boy. Well, Joe, here we are. Kyle, how much time do we have left before we have to go away?
Oh, about 40 seconds, 50 seconds.
Boy, that's not much time, Joe.
Well,
time enough, Joe, to thank you for coming here. And your wife, the novelist Julie Kramer, her new book, Delivering Death, and she's doing an appearance today.
Yeah, she's going to be actually on this radio station in the next hour talking about TV days. And she's going to be in Woodbury Tuesday night for the club book session that's at the library there.
All right.
Tuesday night.
Be there. Catch Julie. Joe, thank you so much, everybody. Have a great weekend. Stay warm. Bye-bye.